Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Rowing Chat. I'm Rebecca Caro, and today I'm joined by Luke Walton from Rower Academy. But first, a message from our sponsors. As a man, do you find it hard to get a dress shirt that actually fits your rowing body? Rowing Chat is introducing William Marnie, the specialist shirt maker for athletes. You can get started with an exclusive 10% discount using the coupon RowingChat10, and you can follow the link that's in the show notes, or you can go to rowing.chat/sponsors and find out more about them. Please do support our sponsors. It helps us keep the show on the road and to cover our costs and our overheads. Now, secondly, we're doing a survey of the Rowing Chat audience, and you're going to hear me talk about this several times over the coming weeks. We'd love you to participate. It'll help us learn more about you, no matter how long you've been a listener of Rowing Chat. You may have been with us from our very first show in 2013, or this may be the first time that you've ever tuned in. So please take a few minutes and go to the website, which is www.rowing.chat/listener-survey. You'll find the listener survey link also at the bottom of the homepage. And if you can complete the survey, we'd be hugely appreciative. And just as a note, you can do it anonymously. So grab a glass or cup of your favorite beverage and help us out by doing the survey for us. Now, I'm delighted to welcome Luke to Rowing Chat. Luke, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Now, tell the listeners a little bit about you and your background in the sport of rowing.
In the sport of rowing. As we were talking about before we went live, I was a swimmer. I was an age group swimmer from the time that I was 10 years old until I was 16. So my sophomore year of high school. And I had gotten a bit burned out, swimming twice a day, staring at, the black line, sometimes blue line at the bottom of the pool. And I was looking for a different outlet. At the time, my younger brother, Eric, had been rowing at the San Diego Rowing Club. And he suggested that I come and try rowing. So I went down to the rowing club that summer. They threw me in an open water single with no instruction. I flipped that boat 10 or 15 times, but I will never forget that day. I will never forget the first strokes that I ever took and the exhilaration that I felt. Told myself I was going to try rowing for a few weeks, see how it went, and eventually end up back in swimming. I just needed some time. 2 weeks into rowing, it was over. There was just not going to be any more swimming. So, that was it. I found rowing at the beginning of my junior year, rowed for 2 years at the San Diego Rowing Club, was recruited, to row at the University of California, Berkeley, rowed there for 4 years, in a very, special time under, the direction of Coach Steve Gladstone, who's now the head coach at Yale. And in that time, at the end of my sophomore year of college, I was picked up by the under 23 national team and rowed on the under 23 team for 2 years, won a gold medal and bronze medal in 1999 and 2000. And then I made my first senior team, first U.S. senior team in 2001, rowed in the eight in 2001, the Cox four in 2002, and then switched to the pair in 2003 and 2004. Qualified for the Olympics and rode in the Olympics in 2004 in Athens. My pair partner, Artur, and I, we did the best that we possibly could against an incredible field that year and in the form of specifically the Australians and the Croatians and the South Africans. And then went to graduate school and spent time at Cambridge and rode in the boat race for 2 years. Losing end of both of those campaigns. Obviously, you'd like a win when you're racing in the boat race. There are no consolations. There's no third place. It's just a win or a loss. Two losses there, but really part of two incredible campaigns and two incredible groups of guys that I had the honor and privilege of rowing with and rowing alongside. So I really do, despite losing both years, cherish my time rowing at Cambridge. And that concluded my rowing career. At the end of 2006, I officially hung up the oar and moved into triathlon for a period of time and tried to get away from rowing. And then rowing found me. And here I am again, right back in rowing. And I've been here, you know, firmly for the past 5, 6, 8 years.
Now, obviously you and I met when you were in the UK, and then we connected again because I noticed you posting videos about your new business, Rower Academy. What does it do?
Well, predominantly what we're doing, and I say we, and we talked about this before the show, the idea that it's a one-man band right now, and Rower Academy is I'm coaching, but you know, it's the rowing community. We're always going to say we. So if you hear me speaking in we terms, you know, just roll with it. We at Rower Academy are focusing on helping young men and women who have interest in rowing in college, specifically U.S. colleges, navigate the recruiting process successfully. And we don't just function through consulting. We're not just here to advise. We're actually getting involved, and we work on the development aspect. And so we work with athletes on improving their 2K. We work with athletes on the mental game. We work on strategy. So we are coaching athletes through the recruiting process, advising them through the process, but then also helping them develop as they move forward.
What a privilege to work with people at such an influential time in their life. And I am so sure that you have a ton of fun responding to how these people approach the world.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's great to be able to give back to the community that's given me so much. Through my rowing experience, I have had incredible adventures all over the world. I've been able to row in some of the most beautiful, picturesque places you can possibly imagine. I've met some of the highest quality people that exist on this planet. And so this rowing experience has given me so much. It's taught me so much. And specifically has taught me a lot in my formative years as a young man. You know, and I learned a lot in high school. And in college, I really do believe that rowing at a high level in college for a rowing program, a collegiate rowing program, is a huge part of how young men and women become men and women. And, you know, I'm biased in the sense I think everybody should be part of a rowing team, but I really do think there are life lessons that are available through engaging training and racing in rowing that really aren't available anywhere else to that degree and that level. And as such, it puts all of us who go through it into this terrific position. So the long answer to your question is, yeah, I get fired up. It's so great to be back with young men and women who are on the front side of that experience. And they're embracing the opportunity and creating opportunities for themselves. So I leave so many rowing sessions with these young athletes just really fired up, and it brings me back to those novice days when, you know, as I talked about, I'm out there flipping a single and have no idea what I'm doing, but really loving every minute of it.
Now, the process of transitioning from childhood to adulthood, part of that is about learning to make your own decisions and beginning to understand the consequences of your decisions. Tell us the story about how you quit swimming and how your parents related with you to the very difficult conversation that you had to take age 16.
Sure. And, you know, maybe I skipped over that in the intro, but, you know, just said, you know, I simply mentioned that I departed from swimming. It was a bit of a bumpy departure, not really anything on my end, but how it was taken by those that were relying on me, and specifically the swimming coach. And as we spoke about before the show, I walked in, you know, after I'd made the decision, this is that I'm staying, I'm gonna stick with with rowing. I've just found rowing. I love rowing. I want to keep rowing. So I had to have that very difficult conversation with the swimming coach. So I went in and said, hey, I know you're relying on me in my junior and senior year to swim the 200 and 500 freestyle. But I'm going to let you know now in the fall, well in advance of the season, that I'm going to switch to rowing. And to this day, I still remember his words. And he told me that was the stupidest decision that I could possibly make, and that I would never amount to anything in rowing. And that was hard to hear as a 16-year-old. It was the first time someone had told me no, not in the sense that like, hey, mom, can I have more ice cream? And mom says no, but somebody actually told me that I couldn't do something and that I wouldn't be successful in something that I was really quickly falling in love with and developing a passion. So I went home and I told my parents about this episode that had transpired. And I really admire the way that my parents handled it. Instead of marching me back to the coach with my two parents standing in front of me and giving the coach an earful about what they thought about how they treated, you know, their son, my parents simply asked me, you know, they kind of flicked this off, flea flicked it, and don't worry about the coach. How does it make you feel? And I told my parents, it angered me, it frustrated me. I really felt let down by the response and, you know, who is this person to tell me that I couldn't do something? And my parents said, good, use that as fuel. And we had a very honest discussion about the idea that swimming was going to be something that was going to help me get into college. And I was a good student. I was a very solid student, but I wasn't a, you know, 4+ GPA, you know, high scoring SAT. I had very solid scores. But athletics were going to be something that was going to be the differentiating factor for me that would land me in school. And so they made it very clear that it was a risk that I was taking, switching from a sport that I was good at into unknown territory during my junior year of school. And really what that did is it allowed me to understand the gravity of the situation. It allowed me to take full ownership over my decision, that this is my decision, my process, for better or worse. The outcome is on me. And as such, that really fueled the fire and helped me along.
What a fantastic opportunity that your parents probably realized at the time, and the fact that you understand it too. Sure. And now, of course, you're the coach. And you're working with parents who have ambition for their children and children who have ambition for themselves.
Yes.
Talk to us about the three rowing numbers that matter if you're trying to get recruited.
Sure. And really, from a just statistical, you know, if we're looking at your statistics, what is going to get you in front of a coach for a conversation? The three numbers you're looking at your GPA, your grade point average. You're looking at your SAT and or ACT standardized testing scores. And you're looking at your ERG score. So when it comes to GPA, SAT, ACT, we want those numbers as high as possible. When it comes to ERG score, we want that number as low as possible, specifically your 2K ergometer score. So really what it comes down to is by making sure that you're moving your GPA, SAT, ACT as high as possible and your ERG score as low as possible, that will give you the opportunity or more opportunities to have more conversations with coaches. If your numbers are not to a standard necessary for whatever the institution is, then you're not going to have a conversation. And to be really clear on this, a lot of the top name rowing schools in the United States, rowing universities and colleges, are also the top academic institutions. And at the end of the day, admissions makes the final decision. Just because a coach wants you, just because a coach is recruiting you for your ERG score and your ability and who you are as an athlete, if you don't have the academics to back it up, then there really isn't a conversation to be had. And so you want to do the best that you possibly can in school. You want to do the best that you possibly can in rowing. And what that will afford you is access to more coaches and more conversations so that you're more in the driver's seat when it comes to finding the best fit the best school for you and the best fit for that school.
That's a fantastic summary of pretty much, I'm guessing, most of what Rowing Academy does. Yeah. Now, Luke has spent a lot of time working on video advice. There's a YouTube channel that you can pick up from the Row Academy website. And what we're going to do now is just have a quick look at an interview that he ran with some parents of a high school, two high school rowers who he worked with, who successfully got recruited.
Objectively, so kind of clear away all the clutter and do your very best you can academically and on the earth, and put yourself in the very best position to be recruited by the schools that you want and are more yours for.
All right, thanks, guys.
And fantastic advice there. Now, tell us, who were those people?
So that family, the Piegza family, they are near and dear to my heart. I've worked with their. With their children, Jack and Matt, for, and they're not children, they're young men and men now, you know, but I worked with them when they were, you know, they were kids. And they worked very hard. Both of them worked very hard. Jack had a great career as a lightweight at Cornell. He was recruited to row at Cornell and rowed all 4 years there. Matt is in the middle of his campaign at the University of Pennsylvania, and he's rowing as a heavyweight. So, The Piegza family figured it out in terms of the way that you're going to get the attention of a coach to have a conversation to demonstrate who you are as an athlete, as a human being, as a competitor, as a teammate, and all of those things that happen when you're interviewed by these coaches and you start to have communication. That access is only available as coaches are combing through heaps and heaps of data that is submitted through questionnaires and Be Recruited website and all these different places where they're trying to find athletes that match the academic and athletic criteria of that school, that university.
So it's a pretty tough ask. And to somebody who is maturing as a person, let's move on to priorities, particularly in this really challenging academic year. Right now, people are probably reading on the news that universities are restricting the number of undergraduates they'll be taking for the next academic year. And of course, that affects scholarships and academic scholarships. What's your take on the situation?
Yeah, it's an interesting time. And, you know, I think it can accurately be referred to as a crisis, but in any crisis, we need to look to the opportunity that's available. And the opportunity, what this crisis has done to the rowing community has been difficult because we're not going down to the boathouse to meet up with our teammates and to row in boats with our teammates and to bring out the best in one another. And we've lost that community a little bit. I think there's some great things going on right now with the virtual challenges that are going on, and there's a, you know, creating teams through different, you know, ERG online challenges, and so the community is finding the way back to community. But again, there's not a scheduled rowing program, there's not scheduled training, and so athletes really have to find motivation within themselves to move forward. But for those athletes who do find that motivation, there is no better time in a sport where generally we focus on anything but ourselves, that we can focus on ourselves and we can focus on our ERG score specifically. Summer started early. That's the way to look at it. So your ability to focus on your ERG score, which really is going to be the only metric that coaches who are recruiting can use this year. There are no regional results. There are no national results. There's not footage of you rowing on the water. It's going to be your score and footage of you rowing on the ergometer. And that is what is going to open the door for conversations. And that is by and large what's going to be used in this recruiting year.
So getting recruited is tough, and it's getting tougher. And this year is exceptional. So talk us through the sort of hang-ups that you see athletes presenting with as they're going through this process. Because most of them take 12 months plus from thinking they want to get recruited right through to actually starting at the university?
Yeah, you know, a lot of athletes that we're working with, we're happy to get them at the beginning of their sophomore year. We generally get a lot of athletes at the beginning of their junior year. Sometimes we get athletes at the second semester of their junior year. And, you know, the heavy recruiting that's going on is happening between junior summer and the fall of senior year. And it's in that time that athletes need to be, ready academically and athletically, so that they can have as many conversations, as many opportunities as possible. One of the things that we do see in this process is, you know, when you're working with sophomores or you're working with juniors in their first semester, they progress pretty well. And they progress pretty well because the concept is still the concept of recruiting. It's not real yet. It's sort of an abstract concept. Well, then we get into the second semester of junior year, and specifically get into junior summer. And athletes start to understand that the window for recruiting is wide open and soon to be closed. Attention starts to creep in, and a timeline starts to be felt by these athletes. And a lot of times, it's very rare that I don't see this, actually, but a lot of times, or most times for that matter, because of the pressure cooker that is the recruiting process, athletes have a tendency, despite progressing physically, despite getting stronger, despite getting faster in every other metric and every other distance on the ergometer, there's a hang up with the 2K because there's an understanding that the 2K is the score. It's the one that's most important. I'm running out of time. It's only 3 months until, you know, recruiting season's going to be closed, and it kind of goes on and on. So a lot of athletes do suffer from the mental hang up and the pressure cooker that is the recruiting process.
I'm guessing then that there is a lot of opportunity for an individual to present an excuse.
Absolutely.
As part of that hang up. So what are the red flags that you see when you sense that something's happening in their mind that is going to limit their opportunity, limit their potential?
Well, I think excuses for these athletes, for any athlete, for any human being, is always focused on the external factors that are preventing us from doing what we want to do. And so when I start hearing athletes talking about what's going on in training, whether or not it's quote unquote fair, they're not getting seat raced as much as they like, they felt they didn't have enough preparation for their 2K, or it was sprung on them, and they kind of go on and on and on. It's as a coach, I've heard every excuse. I've heard every excuse a high school athlete can come up with. And, as a coach, you gently work through that with the athletes to sort of shed through and all of those excuses. And then you have the real conversation, which is, to level with an athlete and help them understand that this journey is unique because it's their journey, but they're not the first athlete to go through the recruiting process. They're not the first athlete to have hangups and excuses. They're not the first athlete to be looking at everything other than themselves as the reason why. But then I reassure them that all the other athletes made it through, and they all, a lot of times it takes helping an athlete understand that they need to loosen their grip, and not loosen their grip in the way that they don't care about the outcome anymore, but instead to be very, very focused on process over outcome. And you see that in the younger athletes, it's all process. They don't care about the outcome. They're new to rowing, they're freshmen and sophomore and first semester juniors, and isn't this cool? And I'm having so much fun and I love it. And then the pressure starts to mount, and that's where you're seeing athletes becoming just the outcome is right there. It's just in their face. They can taste it every single day, and it's blocking them from being able to see what they need to do daily to continue to move forward. And so it's about helping them loosen their grip a little bit and helping them understand the only thing that they can ask of themselves or that anyone else can ask of them is, did I do my best on that day? And when we have great days, we want to keep the pedal down. When we have average days, we want to keep the status quo. And when we have terrible days, we want to limit the damage. And if we've done that, there's no need for excuses. We can be very honest that we have no regrets about what we did, and we did everything we could on that day to move forward.
That is so interesting, because when I was in that exact age group, I wasn't a rower, but I did have high ambition to go to a university. I spoke with my school careers counselor. I actually ended up having a one-on-one interview with the headmistress, and they said in no uncertain terms, we would not advise you on this course of action. And I remember sitting in front of them and saying, you can't stop me. And they said, no, that's correct. And we stumbled into this need for me to take examinations in subjects, and they kindly prepared a work program for me. I did have a couple of lucky breaks, but the fact was that I had something like 3 or 4 one-hour lessons a week that I had to go into the school building for. And the rest of the time I was studying at home under my own steam. And I remember making a mental bargain with myself that come, you know, the day after the examination, could I put my hand on my heart? And these are my exact mental words. Could I put my hand on my heart and say that I had done my absolute best? And if I did and the outcome was not what I wanted, I would still be able to live with it because I had virtually no excuses, as you said. Yeah. And the process became my day-to-day metric.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And you know, if I could add to that, it just makes me think a lot of times I've been asked by high school athletes or, you know, peers or others, you know, how did you go to the Olympics? And my simple answer, very simple answer, and it usually gets a laugh, is because I decided to. And then people are waiting for more of an answer. But I think that speaks to exactly what you've just said, where you made the decision for yourself. You weighed the opinions of other people. You weighed the suggestions of other people. But in your heart, in your mind, you knew what you were going to do. And you made that decision. And then from that decision, every action stems on a daily basis. And when I made that decision, you know, in 1992, I was watching swimming at the Barcelona Olympics on, you know, television. I was like, ooh, that would be neat to do one day. And when I was rowing, there's a rowing program called Canamex, Canada, America, Mexico. We were the pioneers. We were the first team to go down there to Mexico City in 1996. And I remember watching rowing. Maybe someday I could do that in rowing. And next thing I know, I made an under 23 national team at 19 years old. And I thought to myself, this could happen. This could happen. And so it went from sort of this kind of like, oh, maybe this could happen, and then inching closer towards it. And as it became more of a reality, it really entrenched itself as a decision. And then all of the actions stemmed and continue to stem to this day from that decision that, you know, I want to operate from a space just like you. Am I doing the most that I possibly can today? Or am I looking back and regretting, oh, I should have done this or I should have done that? You know, life's too short for the coulda, shoulda, woulda. And you know, one of the things that I advise rowers, if you're going to go down to the boathouse every day, you might as well make the most of it. If you're going to put the time in, you might as well do the best that you possibly can. Otherwise, you're just wasting your time and the team's time. You know, what's the point?
So how do you teach people about this mindset of opportunity?
Yeah, it goes back to what we were just talking about in terms of loosening the grip a little bit. Not that you don't care, but really focusing on what it is that you can control in the space that you're operating out of on that day. And that creates opportunity. Opportunity is created out of movement, right? Paralysis through analysis, as we talk about in rowing, you can overthink the rowing stroke, you can overthink your training, you can overthink rowing. It's one of the great and terrible things about the complexity of the technical nature of training and the technical nature of the rowing stroke. You can get yourself just totally locked up analyzing things, but there's no substitute for doing. And a lot of times it just comes down to not worrying about outcomes so much, but just really focused on really simple, the stroke that you're on. Take that stroke to the best of your ability, shelve it, take the next one, and just keep stacking stroke after stroke after stroke. On the great days, they're amazing strokes. On the average days, we're trying to make sure we're doing at least as well as we did the day before. And on the terrible days, there will always, always be terrible days. Nobody has a great day every single day. How do you limit the damage, right? How little do you let the rowing stroke or the splits on the ergometer get away from you? And if you can limit that damage, you can look yourself in the mirror, in the eye afterwards and say, well, that's what I had. And I gave it. My mind wanted to give more. My body said, no, that's what I had. And that creates consistency in movement, and that creates speed, and that creates improvement. And that's where opportunity starts to come from, is from moving and doing. You're creating that opportunity through movement and commitment to that daily mindset of improvement.
And that's such a great way to approach things, because fortunately for us, rowing is this cyclical activity. You know,
absolutely.
In 1 second, you might have done one stroke.
Yeah, you might exactly. Have
done half a stroke, a quarter of a stroke. You have plenty of time to go, well, that was a bad stroke. Put it behind
exactly.
me.
Yeah, and we've all had the coach who loves to tell us at the end of the megaphone, you take the stroke, no.
No.
You take the next stroke, no. You take the next stroke. No, you're like, this really isn't going well. But to your point, you know, the rowing stroke, the one that matters is the stroke that you're on. Thinking about the one that you just took or the next one, that distracts from the task at hand. And you joke about the monotony of rowing, right? Rowing rewards monotony. Let's do the same thing over and over again in the same tempo over and over again. But it's monotony done at a really high level, because we all know how technical the rowing stroke is. And to be able to stack technically proficient strokes back to back to back to back to back is actually a very difficult endeavor. It's very difficult in rowing to do the exact same thing at the high level over and over and over again.
Yeah. That is such a truism. And of course, anyone who's not done rowing will not understand this. But let's talk about the mindset of opportunity outside of rowing. How do you help these athletes move into what I would call life skills?
Yeah. I'm sorry, you cut out just a little bit, but it was life skills. Is it how we transfer it? Look, I'm biased. I'm going to come out. I'm going to admit my bias. I think rowing's the greatest sport. I think rowers are just better people. There, I've said it. There's the soundbite, you know, and if anybody disagrees, that's fine. But, you know, I think there is a camaraderie that exists in rowing. There is an ego check that exists in rowing. We come from a position of we and a position of us. And so, you know, it's the opportunity that is available to rowers. Part of that comes from the network that is created. There are great opportunities that exist in the network in collegiate rowing, as alumni of a collegiate program, in the rowing community in general. Rowers like to help rowers. Rowers understand one another. So contributing to the rowing economy, you know, contributing to the rowing community is a vital thing that athletes need to learn and understand, that they are part of this bigger ecosystem. And, you know, I think that speaks to the story you were telling me, you know, earlier about people that are in New Zealand that are rowers reaching out to you in this time and the conversations you're having with people. So, you know, it's just rowers – you know, the opportunity that is available, not only within rowing, but after rowing, in the business life, the skill set that you acquire through the endeavor of rowing is applicable in anything that you pursue after you graduate and you move on to the next level in business or the national team or whatever it is that you have in store for yourself. I think the lessons available through rowing are transferable to everywhere in life.
Yeah, I certainly would agree with that. And it's certainly the case that, you know, I've had the privilege of coaching some amazing young people who were extremely young. They were between the ages of 10 and 14. And even at that stage, you began to see these young people work out what they wanted to do. And a particular young man springs to mind. He was called Bradley. And he wanted to get a scholarship to a school in the UK, but he had some challenges, one of which was that he had ADHD. Mm-hmm. You know, like, that was for real. Sure. And I remember vividly a conversation with his mum, and she was explaining about his condition and the medications that he had. And she told me that kind of probably around after his first year of rowing, how much he enjoyed coming down to the rowing club. And she said, I let him choose how much medication he wants to take each day because he knows the effect it has on him. And yet he knows he needs a little bit of control so that he has the discipline to follow the kid in front of him in the boat. And he's not like away with the fairies and look at the sky and look at the birds and look at the ducks. And, you know, there's a bridge or something. Mm-hmm. And it was absolutely fascinating and such a great achievement for that man when he got recruited to the school of his choice, partly due to his rowing. But I strongly suspect, and I can't validate this because I never asked his mum afterwards, that those skills, you know, fed through into his classroom life and fed through into a broad suite of skills that he now uses for his own existence. And Bradley, if you're out there, hello.
Yeah. And if I may just piggyback on that quickly, I think I was talking to a parent a few months ago about the concept that how great is rowing for young men and women to experience adversity before they just get thrust into the real world, right? I mean, as you grow up, you know, by and large, you're going to have a supportive family. You're going to have supportive coaches. You're going to be part of schools and universities that want to see you succeed. If you're there, they want to bring out the best in you. Teachers who want to see you succeed. And then you're going to graduate. And you're going to go out in the real world and you're going to learn no one cares about you. No one cares about your feelings or did you have a hard day? And beyond that, there are going to be people out there who actively want to see you fail for reasons that you'll never understand. But what a great situation is something like rowing, which is a team sport where you have to manage your ego amongst the egos of everyone else in the team, where you have to contribute to the greater good of the team, where things are hard and they're difficult, right? Rowing doesn't tickle. It's not a sport that draws the attention of people who are like, oh, this is fun. No, people in rowing like the difficulty of rowing. It hurts. It's hard. And there is a sense of achievement in that, in overcoming that adversity. And I think it's a very safe space for young men and women to develop skills that are necessary in the real world when they get out there and they realize not everybody is there to support you. And it's also in that point that they'll realize just how valuable the rowing community is, you know, when they hit the real world. You know, they're looking everywhere for rowers, you know, you know, where are all the rowers? You know, I don't understand who these people are and why do they view life this way? This is so foreign to me, you know, but you experience that when you get into the real world. And I think that rowing creates tougher people. Rowing creates people who can deal with adversity, who can problem solve, who can, you know, check their emotions and deal with things that are difficult. And these skills are vitally important when you get into the business world and into the real world.
That is such a truism. And I particularly like that, what you were saying. It's great for experiencing adversity. Yeah. Now, Luke, tell people where they can contact you and how they can find out more about you and your services of you, the team, the plural team at Rower Academy.
Yeah, the website, roweracademy.com, and at the bottom of the screen, you can see there's the contact us. Don't hesitate, you know, please contact me. Feel free to reach out. We'll get on the phone. We'll have a conversation. Especially now in the midst of all the stay-at-home orders, I'm doing a lot of virtual coaching. It's very effective. Access to an ERG, a phone with, you know, some earphones in, and the ability to Skype or FaceTime or any of those things, we can have really productive sessions and work on technique. We can have productive sessions to work on fitness. I can coach you through a 2K. So I'm trying to be as accessible as possible. I want to work with as many athletes as possible and give them any help that I possibly can to set them on the right course so that they could potentially have the experience that I had in rowing. And I cherish that experience, and what's keeping me here, continuing to work within the rowing community. I tried to escape it. I tried to switch sports and get involved in triathlon. It lasted a while, but I'm right back here. I'm back. So, you know, it really is any opportunity I have to work with young men and women, I'm very eager to do it. And I get very excited about the idea that they already have a rowing program. So if they're coming to me, I'm not questioning whether or not they're motivated. And so I you know, from a selfish perspective, I'm blessed with athletes who have ambitions and are highly motivated. If not, they wouldn't contact me in the first place. So I have all the time in the world for any young man or woman who's going to come to me and say, you know, I want to be recruited. I want to row in college. I want to create the most opportunities. I mean, I think you can hear it. I just get fired up thinking about it. And it's been very rewarding and a lot of fun for me to do. And I've been very proud of the hard work that all these young men and women have put in over the years. And I'm very proud of where they've ended up. Not only in university, but post-grad and the great jobs that they go on to finding and the great work that they do. So it's been a real blessing to be a part of this and to continue to be a part of the rowing community.
Luke, your enthusiasm is amazing. I wish I was one of your students. I wish I'd learned to row when I was at high school because I didn't, but hey.
Now, what I will say, that is the one caveat. I do have athletes that are master's athletes or new athletes that are coming and finding me, and I'm not turning them away. You know, I am working with a lot of high school athletes, but I'm not trying to keep the rowing knowledge away from anybody who wants it. So I've been creating training programs and working with master's athletes and new athletes, and you know, the YouTube channel, we're trying to push out as much content as possible to make rowing as accessible as possible. I've been blessed by having rowed in some very great programs, having been coached by people like Steve Gladstone, Mike Tatey, Charlie Butt, Bill Manning, Rob Baker, Tim McLaren, the list just goes on. And by and large, not everybody has access to those coaches. The coaching community is kind of a closed circuit because those coaches need to kind of hang on to their secret sauce, you know, and I feel I've been blessed in learning a lot from these coaches. And I'm trying to take that information and I'm trying to package it and get it out to as many people who haven't had the privilege of being able to row for these coaches. And I'm hopeful that some of the things that I've learned from them, I can impart on new rowers and young rowers and help them move along. And that's really what the focus of the YouTube channel is.
That's fantastic. And of course, one of the biggest things that I believe all of us have a responsibility to do is to teach other coaches as well. I feel that, you know, there's the standing on the shoulders of giants mm-hmm. feeling here. I got mm-hmm. coached by Harry Mann probably sure. six times. Yes. But yeah. I was also coached by some other amazing people who are less well known. And so on sharing what I've learned from them to yeah. you, to everyone who's listening today, I think is part of our mutual responsibility. And again, it's the check your ego attitude that rowing yeah. brings.
Yeah. And I think that's great. I've had a lot of quiet conversations with college coaches, some assistant coaches, and they've asked for information share. And I have no trouble with that. But, you know, when when you are competitive between universities in the United States, you know, those head coaches and assistant coaches aren't calling each other up. Hey, what are you guys doing this week? You know, what's your training program look like? Or, you know, how do you coach this portion of the rowing stroke? And so, you know, from the competitive aspect, I think it's the information share is somewhat limited because of that. But I think there is a group out there. You and I are included in that group and others that are working to make some of the higher level knowledge of rowing accessible to everybody, even if they, you know, haven't had the chance. And if you rowed for Harry Mann, I'm going to sit down and listen to everything you have to tell me about what you learned from Harry. I mean, you know, there are these legends that people have had the privilege of rowing for, and they're known as legends, but I couldn't tell you what Harry Mann's coaching philosophy is or how he coaches the rowing stroke, because I don't necessarily have access to that. But if there's a chance I could have access to it through you or others that have had experiences and have created their own vision of the rowing stroke from, you know, the collective of everything they've taken that is great from these coaches, then I think there's a real market for that. And I think you're right. I think the rowing community's open to it and probably wants it. So, you know, maybe we go down that path and start doing more data share.
Tim McLaren's a name that you mentioned who we Absolutely. Both know. And I vividly remember speaking with him one day on the Tideway when you guys were out, finished rowing, and he was fiddling with the boat. And I approached him and I said, "Hey, Tim, I'd really like to interview you and to understand your view of the rowing stroke." And he kindly put down his banner and looked me in the eye and he said, "Rebecca, I'm not going to do that." He said, "Because yeah. I will say things and other people will misinterpret them and mm-hmm. I will not get my message across." And mm-hmm. I sighed and thanked him and walked away. And now we're quite a few years past that. And I spoke with Tim again recently, and he's now back coaching in a club. And I reminded him of that conversation. He said, "Do you know, I was wrong. I do need to be getting out there and explaining my thoughts on the rowing stroke, because there are so many people who are willing to learn who cannot physically be here with me right here, right mm-hmm. now." Mm-hmm. And I thought, what a fantastic man. What a to be humble enough to admit that he thought he'd made a mistake. His priorities, I'm sure, have changed somewhat sure. in the intervening years. And I really look forward to being a part of that, because
yeah.
his views are as valuable as other people's views, and not everybody's right.
Yeah, and I, you know, having Tim as a finishing coach at Cambridge, I really enjoyed his eye and his take on the rowing stroke, and I think he just has so much to offer. So if he is open to that, I think that's fantastic, right? And I also think there should be a recognition, you know, amongst these legends like, you know, Tim or Harry Mann or Mike Tatey or Steve Gladstone, that even if they share the information, it doesn't mean the people listening are going to be the next Harry Mann or the next, you know, Tim McLaren. Just because you read it in a book or watch it in a video does not then make you an expert on, you know, whatever it is. You know, you still have to put in the hours, and there are intangibles that are available in all of those coaches. You can't quite put your finger on it, but there are things that they do that brings the very best out in their athletes. So, you know, any information that we can draw from that on sort of the technical aspects of the rowing stroke, I think that should definitely be shared, so that people are starting to debate, you know, proper rowing, if you will, and what the best stroke pattern is and what's most effective and all of that. But at the end of the day, there are intangibles that are available in a lot of these coaches that you just can't quite figure it out, but that's what makes them who they are. And they have a great ability to bring out the very best in the athletes and the crews that they coach.
Yeah, that is an attribute that's stardust, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Little sprinkle of stardust at the end, right? You know, it's the morale side of things, right? You know, Gladstone would always talk to us about the three pillars of rowing. You needed crushing power, impeccable technique, and great morale. Well, power and technique, I mean, that's very data-driven. It's very, you know, it's the optics of it. It's the pattern of it. It's the data to produce the best erg scores. But when it comes to morale, that is the intangible. And successful coaches are great at taking that intangible and creating great morale amongst their crews, just excellent morale, which is within a crew is that intangible of, man, that crew is really good. You know, what did they have? What did they have? You know, and you see that at the Olympic level in a lot of these Olympic champions. I mean, everybody is good at rowing at the Olympic level. Everybody has put in the training. But those that can differentiate themselves have that little extra stardust, that little something, that morale, that undying belief that they're going to win, that not everybody has.
I certainly think that great bowmen in coxless boats and great coxswains also have that. I can bring to mind events when a crew raced out of their skins at whatever level they were. And I have a particular one that springs to mind at the Blue Lakes Regatta that I was in. And what brought that crew together in that moment and enabled them to do the very best they could with the resources that they had. Mm-hmm. And that made a special race. It wasn't an amazing outcome. It certainly wasn't the Olympics. But I think we all have the ability to contribute that.
Sure. Sure. And, you know, we joke around about coxswains, right? Oh, they can't win the race, but boy, they can sure lose it. You know, that's that old joke about coxswain. But at the same time, their voices still echo in my head. And I can be on an erg by myself, focusing on a certain aspect of the rowing stroke, and I will hear one of them coaching me through that in the same way that I can hear my coach's voices. And, you know, especially when you are on your limit in a 2K race, those voices will never, never leave you. There's such an emotional attachment to what comes from a coxswain. And I've been blessed. I've had some very, very good coxswains in my day who really understood how to bring out the very best in the crew and to keep everybody unified and to keep everybody's undying belief in one another together through the hardest parts of any of the races that I've been in. So yeah, I agree with you wholeheartedly that whoever the voice is, if it's someone calling from the bow or the two seat in a quad or a four, or if it's a coxswain, those voices are vitally, vitally important to the process.
What fun rowing is. We could talk about this one day.
We could.
Luke, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for being here with us.
No, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. This has been great.
And so to our listeners, if you're here for the first time, check us out at the website rowing.chat. You can subscribe there to get a weekly email, which gives you a summary of all the episodes that have been published right across the Rowing Chat Network during the prior week. Now, we have 7 separate shows. I'm delighted to announce we just have our first coxswain show. Whitney Powell, who is out of San Diego, he is doing the Candid Coxswain podcast, and she just published her first episode. So please go and have a look at that. And you can listen to all of the Rowing Chat Network shows on any podcast platform, SoundCloud, Google Play, Spotify, iTunes, name your favorite. Please tell your friends, leave us a review if you can. It helps us to sneak up the rankings and, more importantly, to share the wonderful love of the sport of rowing, which Luke and I have been talking about today. Till next time, goodbye.